This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, we're diving into the Pandora Papers.
This is, of course, the largest ever leak of data on offshore dealings with some prominent local names appearing in them. So first, we're going to look at what it was like to break the story. Then we look at the issue of tax havens. And finally, what reforms do we need to ensure that financial loopholes don't get exploited?
Tell us, have you been following this story? What do you think? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07 and let's dive right into it. So the Pandora Papers are essentially documents that were obtained by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, or ICIJ, and essentially reveals information data on tax havens for rich and powerful people. It is actually, as we said earlier, the largest ever leak of data on offshore dealings and offshore finances. So needless to say, it is causing some pretty huge ripples across the world.
So if you're wondering why it sounds familiar-ish, it was preceded by the Panama Papers and also the Paradise Papers. So there's a PA sound thing.
And a love for alliteration,
through.
Apparently.
Yes. A love for alliteration and slightly sort of intriguing sounding names. But anyway, this is where we find ourselves. So that's why we say largest ever, right? Because the previous ones were large as well. When they dropped, I think everybody thought, wow, this is a lot of information to go through. And now we have this huge one. So it includes 11.9 million files from companies hired by wealthy clients to create offshore structures and trusts and in tax havens such as Panama, Dubai, Monaco, Switzerland, the Cayman Islands. And among the people involved, or some of the main names that have been standing out, include 35 world leaders, current and former presidents, prime ministers, heads of state, more than 300 other public officials as well, government ministers, judges, mayors, military generals. So, you know, we often use the term or hear the term political elite, and it's hard to ascertain who exactly that's referring to. But I think here we can safely say that we are talking about the political elite. And with something this large, there are, of course, you would expect, well, Malaysians to show up. And so we have some of the names that were mentioned in the papers include former Finance Minister Tun Daim Zainuddin, as well as his children, as well as current Finance Minister Dato Sri Tengku Zafrul Tengku Abdul Aziz, UMNO President Dato Sri Ahmad Zaid Hamidi, Deputy Finance Minister Yamani Hafiz Musa, and Selayang MP William Leong, who was previously the Treasurer for PKR.
It is worth saying that this is still a developing story. We're still unpacking and learning what, not just what this data means and what they might point to, but also in a larger sense, were there wrongdoings involved? You know, or are these all completely legitimate, just evidence of people with a lot of wealth? So lots of questions still being asked and discussed. Some of the responses that we've had locally, so for instance, Daim Zainuddin has stated that his business dealings have all been legitimate. Zaid Hamidi, meanwhile, has denied that he was trying to evade tax. He explained that at the time he was still in the corporate sector, he was the CEO of a publicly listed company, and that the profits could not be brought out of the country, and therefore he was asked to reinvest them in that particular country. All of which to say, I think this has essentially brought up a lot of questions in terms of the role of tax havens, how they might serve the needs of the political elite, as you say, and other people of a certain strata, and what this might translate to in terms of transparency, in terms of information. And really, even for me, I'm trying to unpack what this means, because I think it's very difficult to make the connection between these huge sums and what it might translate to.
It's also in terms of knowledge, right? So I think that there's no denying that the ultra rich and the rest of us live in very different worlds. And this includes access to knowledge. Now, we normally think about that in terms of the broader, more general, more nourishing sense of knowledge, I guess. But in this case, I'm talking about money, about the things that you can do with it, or the avenues that you can explore with it. Because You're right in saying that even ascertaining whether something is legal or illegal, you know, I think for most of us, hearing offshore tax havens creates a certain image or a certain degree of unsavoriness, but that does not mean that it is in fact illegal. And in fact, in reading about it, so on The Guardian, I believe one of the cases that they mentioned was of the former Prime Minister Tony Blair and the buying of a house. And in that buying, they specifically say that nothing illegal happened, but what the Blairs did, and they are wealthy, of course, was exploit a tax loophole. So in the buying of that house, they didn't have to pay as much tax as they otherwise would have. And that's what I mean by knowledge, and that's what I mean by connection. So I think when we're talking about legal or illegal, that's very black and white. But what these papers also show is that there is a whole wealth, literally, in the grey. And that is something that perhaps it would help us understand, I think, in terms of financial loopholes, like you said, and where the areas of exploitation could be.
And if we are also talking about people who are our leaders, our political leaders, then how to hold them accountable and make sure that we have enough information to know, you know, if any wrongdoing is committed. So we will be getting into all of this today. First up, we'll be speaking with Aidila Raza, who is a journalist from Malaysia Kini who reported on the Pandora Papers. But we'd like to hear from you. Are you following this story? What do you think? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. It's all about the Pandora Papers today on Inside Story. So keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:14, well, just coming up to 6:15. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about the Pandora Papers, the largest ever leak of data on offshore dealings of the world's rich and powerful. And we're first going to look at the significance of this information. And for that, we will shortly be joined by Aidila Razak from Malaysia Kini. But we'd, of course, like to hear from you. Are you following this story? What do you make of it? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, joining us via Zoom is Aidila Raza, journalist from Malaysia Kini, who reported on the Pandora Papers. Aidila, thanks for being with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I think many of us are actually still trying to get a grasp on all of this information that's come from the Pandora Papers. Talk to us about the sheer scale of this data leak.
Sure. So I guess this has been kind of bandied about a lot, that it's the largest leak that has ever come towards ICIJ's way. And, you know, ICIJ gets a lot of these leaks and they're huge. So ICIJ stands for the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. So compared to the Panama Papers, it's much bigger. It's something like 2.9 terabytes. That is 11.9 million records actually in that dump. And that's coming from 14 service providers of people, so companies that provide services for people who want to set up offshore trust and firms. So that's basically 600 journalists trying to go through 11.9 million records.
And how did you and Malaysia Kini come to be involved in this?
Malaysia Kini has been partnering with ICIJ in various projects for a while now. I myself have been, this would be my fourth project with ICIJ. My first was in 2013. And last year I became a member of the ICIJ outside of Malaysia Kini as well. So ICIJ has a network of organizations that they work with regularly, and Malaysia Kini has been very fortunate to be part of that network.
So as a journalist, what was the significance of reporting on the Pandora Papers?
It's hard to say the significance. I guess when you're doing the work, it doesn't really feel very significant. It just feels like a big slog. but now, I mean, looking at like the responses that are coming through and reactions to it, it feels like maybe it could be something that could change transparency laws, and that's something that I'm looking at.
So you mentioned slog, and I can't really imagine, because it's a lot of information. What was your process for taking this data and then making it both relevant and understandable to a large audience and for the Malaysian context?
Yeah, so I mean, one thing we need to clarify is that we do not have possession of this data. So the ICIJ has possession of it, and we have access, like we can cite the data. So, I mean, we first needed to have some sort of system of what, how are we going to look through this data? Otherwise, it'll just be like looking blind for anything Malaysian, which doesn't even help the cause. So that's the start of it. We had to kind of come up with what are we looking for? Who are we looking for? What information? How are we going to search for this information? And then just basically divvying up the work and then going at it every day. Basically, that's that.
Talk to us about the, I suppose the verification. How do you verify these numbers, these names?
Yeah, so because it's just like a random dump in a way. It's not structured in any way. Sometimes you're lucky that you have identifying information, so like a passport number or an IC number or something that you can verify that this is the person that you're looking for. Sometimes it just sounds like a name that might be familiar. So it really is a lot of kind of using whatever skills that we've built in our work in journalism and using whatever databases that we've had before to cross-check this information.
And what is the response been like overall since Malaysia Kini published the articles on the papers?
To be honest, I didn't really expect quite a response from the public because, you know, previously it has been kind of like, yeah, okay, this is another dump, and yes, rich people have trust overseas, and this isn't exactly something new. But I was quite surprised at how kind of, I suppose, angry people were. I had calls from friends from school saying that, okay, I've read your piece and I don't want to work anymore because I'm so angry. So that kind of like visceral reaction, which really surprised me. I feel as the timing was also kind of right, I suppose, because now Parliament's in session. So this has been an agenda in Parliament as well. And from the people who have been named in the papers, well, I guess most of them were informed beforehand. Maybe some of them didn't think that we would go ahead with it. But now that we have, there have been kind of varied responses from them as well.
In a larger sense, why is it important that the public is made aware of these links, the links between these offshore accounts and members of our own political elite?
I mean, for me personally, I feel like transparency is key, especially when you're talking about elected representatives or people who have power within influential within the circles. I mean, if you look at the most basic thing, if a person has a company in Malaysia, you can quite easily look for it in the Suruhanjaya Syarikat databases. But just because this person moves it into like a tax haven, we won't have any information on that. I mean, that seems to be quite weird to me. Why can't we have access to that information if that information is easily available if the companies are in Malaysia? Besides that, I feel like the context of it is also about like disparity in terms of income as wealth in our society, because increasingly Malaysian society is becoming, there's a wider gap between the haves and have-nots. So for us to be able to expose this and to say that this is not just rumors, this is actually true, that some people have wealth that can go generations and some people can't even feed their families. This is something that's really important, I think society needs to know.
We ran through some of the names earlier, and there are some specific people named, including prominent Malaysian politicians. What has it been like trying to get their response and their comments on the subject?
It has been varied. So politicians mostly, I mean, this is just a habit of politicians. They would ignore us if they don't want to say anything previously. And then when something comes out, they will get a bit angry. The responses, what we try to do is to make sure that we inform everyone that we're naming that this is coming out. We send emails, we send text messages, phone calls, everything. And some of them will respond within the deadline. Some of them will just ignore. Some of them will say, oh, you know, that's old news, and then expect us not to run it. But we are actually quite grateful to some people who gave us quite detailed confirmation about some of the holdings that they have, even though, of course, I mean, legally, they're not bound to at all. And it goes to show that some people are okay with transparency, actually.
Adila, are there outcomes or specific reforms that you're hoping to see as a result of this information being made public?
To be honest, it's quite a leap for Malaysia because we're far behind. I mean, you look at the reforms that have happened after the Panama Papers. You can see, like in the UK or in some European nations, as well as even in the tax havens, some changes that were made, which require people to disclose information if asked. But in Malaysia, we are even the most basic things we don't really have. We do not have access to the assets of our MPs right now. So, I mean, I would hope that even like these basic things are brought back or made better first, lah. Because what we're asking for, I mean, already in Parliament, the finance minister is saying that it's fine if you want to have an offshore account. So, I mean, asking for that seems to be like a reach. If we should start with the basic, at least we should know what our elected reps have.
Adila, thank you for speaking with us.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
That was Adila Razak, journalist from Malaysia Kini. And we'd like to hear from you. Have you been following this story on the Pandora Papers? What do you think? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We have messages already. I think we have time for one.
Yeah, I wanted to address this one from an anonymous listener. This Pandora Papers, according to what I read in the newspapers, there are very few Americans or Western European politicians cited in the report. Are they saints or are they selective in reporting only politicians from developing countries? And the answer to that is quite simple, actually. It's because there's so much information. So, in fact, if you look at international papers and international platforms, they're actually reporting. I think everybody's fixating on the leaders in their own countries. So, really, that's where it's coming from. If you're looking at stuff in the UK, they're going to be talking about their premiers. Boris Johnson is also under scrutiny. So it really depends, I think, on where it is you're getting your news.
Keep those thoughts coming. Have you been following this story on the Pandora Papers? What do you make of it? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're focusing on the Pandora Papers, the biggest ever data leak on offshore accounts of various political elites around the world. Some Malaysian names have come up as well. So we'd like to hear your thoughts. Have you been following this story? What do you make of it? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Shortly, we will get into the legalities of this system and, of course, of tax havens in general. But we do have some messages, so we'll look at those first.
So let's see. We have, first of all, this from Jessica, who says nothing's new. And at the back of every rakyat's mind, we know what's happening. Earlier was the Panama Papers with our politicians and their children listed therein. Now is the Pandora paper. There are more.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually to follow on from that, the vibe I've been getting from a lot of people is I'm not surprised. And I think that feels a little bit, that's a bit of a downer, honestly, that that news like this may make people angry, but it doesn't necessarily surprise people anymore.
Which is problematic, right? And yet I don't think we're alone in this. I do think that around the world, even in countries where they might have stricter laws, in fact, when it comes to things like this, there is still a sense of, well, what do you expect? And perhaps, I don't know. I don't know whether it's just been too many times of these sorts of things dropping or whether it's a reputational issue. I'm not exactly sure what it is. But there is a definite lack of surprise.
We have this from Rantum Scantum, which I'm just going to read out and leave it at that. So they say, I don't know why they've made it so difficult. Be like this fellow with unverified 2 million ringgit in his bank, pay a 1.1 million fine, and it's fine.
love the mention of this fellow. the Malaysianness in that just makes me light up. We have this very interesting message also from Anonymous, who says, the leaks are generally filled with legal transactions, but just because they are legal doesn't mean they're not an issue. It's what we call a lawful evil, to move within the means of legalities. That's why it's frustrating. It doesn't make sense for Malaysia, that has about 80% of our working population not earning enough to pay income tax, and yet tax havens are encouraged for the ultra rich. I'm not surprised. LHDN doesn't even require our public figures to transparently declare their assets in the country. They were just mentioned through vague value brackets and yes or no for their declaration. This is despite the current poor reputation that LHDN and MECC already have. Call it as it is, it's double standards. And Anonymous, this is exactly what I was referring to earlier when... In talking about this, I think it's so important not to look at, is it legal, is it not? Is it bad, is it not? The real question is, what are the loopholes? And how, for most of us who don't live within that bracket and therefore don't have the money to ever be made these offers or to make these offers to other people, we don't know what the loopholes are.
And I think, as our guest Aidila Razak pointed out earlier also, this is also a damning indictment of that wealth gap and just how stark the differences are, right? Keep those thoughts coming. We are discussing the pandemic. Pandora Papers. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, to understand a little better how this system of tax havens and offshore accounts work, we are revisiting an interview that we had this morning. So Wong Xiaoning and Philip C of The Morning Run spoke to Dr. Virinderjit Singh, who is the chairman of Trico Malaysia, on the legalities of this tax system. So we're playing you some clips from that conversation. First up, here's Dr. Virinder breaking down at what point this becomes an issue of legality.
So now, when you talk about, is it illegal? No, it's not illegal. No country says that their citizens or their corporations cannot set up an account or set up an entity in these islands around the world, which are called offshore financial centers. So there's nothing illegal. So if that is not made illegal by your country of residence, then there's nothing, no laws you're breaking. However, the issue will be that if you are flowing money through into those entities which are incorporated in, let's say, BVI, the question for the country from which the money is coming out from will be whether the funds are from legal sources or from tax sources, or are they from sources which are somehow managed to escape taxation.
He then spoke about the implications of this and whether it warrants an investigation by the authorities.
I think when the Panama and all the other leaks were coming out, obviously this is important information, and the Inland Revenue authorities do have it, and they may look at it, but they may look at it from the point of view of looking at the profile of the person. If the profile in the Inland Revenue Board, they have the data of the past, you have been declaring, you know, lots of revenue, you're paying taxes, and it looks reasonable, then there's no reason for them to even raise a question. Because number one is, this is about entities that you have in those jurisdictions in which you may be a director or a shareholder. So number one, there's nothing illegal. Therefore, there's no reason why the authority should even investigate. But what they should be interested in is perhaps the entities themselves, the funds, that they have accounts there as well, how much money is there and where did it come from? And you also need to look at the issue of the fact that this particular entity owned by a corporation or owned by an individual may have business interests overseas. And therefore, the money there is coming from those overseas enterprises and not from Malaysia. So the authorities can look into it, but it's not enough data for them to imply that someone has broken their tax laws. So, yes, it's additional piece of information that they can use together with all the other pieces of information that flows to the Inland Revenue Board.
So next, he spoke about what he knows of past leaks in contrast to the severity of the Pandora Papers.
I don't think we will ever know whether the Inland Revenue has investigated anyone from the past leaks, because this is confidential information and will not be cannot be made public, right? So the Inland Revenue tax information from the Inland Revenue Board is confidential, protected by the Income Tax Act. So we don't really know. But I give you another example. When you had the other aspect of information sharing by countries on residents of Malaysia having bank accounts in those countries, and this was shared with the government to government, and there then you have the Inner Revenue using the information and raising questions. Yes, I'm aware that Inner Revenue has used that a lot and raised questions on individuals. So the Panama, the Paradise, and all these papers that we are looking at leaks probably will be one of the information pieces that the Inner Revenue has to piece together. But I'm not aware of anyone who's been investigated for that because, number one, is the entity, setting up an entity in those jurisdictions is not illegal, and many use it for business purposes. So the assumption that this is illegal is not proven as yet. You have to dig further to find out about the source of funds, if at all this came from Malaysia, because it could be that the source of funds in the BVI entity are from overseas as well. And remember one thing, in the Malaysian context, we only tax whatever is earned in Malaysia, and we don't tax whatever is earned overseas, because we have a territorial scope of system of tax. So that's also important. I just wanted to allude to the fact that this kind of information is much more useful to a country which has a world income scope like the US.
Finally, Virinder talked about the best ways to stop these loopholes considering how much pressure we're under to widen the tax base.
Firstly, the issue really is about reporting whatever, you know, whether Inner Revenue has got a full picture of the earnings of individuals, earnings of entities, and so on, right? And is being reported. And after that, they are investing that money out. So that's totally fine. So that's not a loophole. That is simply using funds that you have paid tax on and then reinvesting it overseas, all right? The challenge here is that the Malaysian tax authorities, like many other authorities in developing countries, do not have access to bank accounts because of confidentiality and all that. This is something you may want to have a word with Bank Negara and so on, but because the accessibility, you know, confidentiality and all that. So the Inner Revenue Board doesn't have access to it and cannot see a full picture. They only can do that when they have costs to investigate a particular individual entity, then they seek permission to have access to the banking accounts. So one of the ways really is about having a full picture, but this is like, this will become like Big Brother watching over you. And then many human rights activists will probably object to this. But that's the only way for the authorities, tax authorities in Malaysia to and any other country to see whether funds are moving in and out and are they from legitimate sources. They may have to raise more questions, but at least they will see flows and they can raise questions. So, but it can lead to a lot of unnecessary issues for those individuals because in legitimate flow of funds, all kinds of questions are coming. Okay. You need to prove the legitimacy.
That was Dr. Virinderjit Singh, chairman of Trico Malaysia, speaking to Wong Xiaoning and Philip C off the morning run earlier today. And they were speaking about the legalities of tax havens and the systems involved when it comes to opening these offshore accounts. To listen to that full podcast, head on to bfm.my or download our app, search for Pandora Paper Leaks. We are discussing, of course, the Pandora Papers. And after this, we're going to address some, we keep hearing loopholes. We're going to talk about transparency, the sort of reform we need to ensure that those loopholes perhaps could be plugged. Do keep sending your thoughts our way. Are you following this expose on the Pandora Papers? What do you make of it? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be free minded. BFM 89.9.
It is just coming up to 6:51. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And we're discussing the Pandora Papers. And we're just going to close off our conversation on that by looking at how the system can account for information like this, the sorts of loopholes that potentially need to be plugged. And really, the question of transparency. So we'd like to hear from you. Are you following this expose on the Pandora Papers? What do you make of it? You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Cynthia Gabriel, human rights advocate at the Center to Combat Corruption and Cronyism, or C4. Cynthia, welcome back to the show. Let's get right into it. What are the gaps in our financial systems that allow for potential exploitation to happen?
The expose yesterday of the Pandora Papers had actually shed light on how the mega rich are exploiting loopholes in the global financial system to avoid paying taxes mainly and transferring money out of countries everywhere. And Malaysia is, of course, no exception. So we find that there have been hundreds of cases that have been exposed, and some involving heads of state, former prime ministers, and in our case, current finance ministers, the UMNO president, and a couple of others. So it's not a new phenomenon. We have the Panama Papers before, and following that, the Paradise Papers. So this is actually the third mega leak, and this involves 12 million documents around the world. So it's a very huge undertaking of investigative journalists, and we just wanted to express our sincere gratitude that it's because of these investigative journalists that we are able to know the truth of who is actually holding directorships or having established firms in offshore accounts. Now, why? We ask, why do they need to actually do this in offshore accounts to actually stash their money away? The first is we are very appalled by the secrecy behind such ventures. And we immediately want to express our concern and our alarm and urge the Malaysian government that started a process to develop beneficial ownership transparency. This is to actually make transparent company registers, that we would now no longer be able to have proxies as directors of companies, but real names, real persons as directors of companies. So beneficial ownership transparency is a real remedy to this situation. And there has been a lot of push at the global level to actually have this done, but the political will to implement this is very, very low. Everywhere, including in Malaysia. So we'd actually like to ask the Companies Commission of Malaysia, the government of Malaysia, what's the progress around beneficial ownership transparency, and how transparent will the registry actually be that investigative journalists, civil society, academics, various different groups would be able to actually log on to track different companies. And what is the benefit of that is that company structures, movement of money, detecting shell companies above all, and to avoid illicit financial flows will be something that would be able to be stopped before it is too late. So I think the main issue here is we will always find out too late where the money had been channeled to, the wheeling, the dealing, and we learn the truth when nothing can be done already.
So what reforms do we need to prevent this? I mean, what laws need to be set in place?
Yeah, so we are actually recommending for two things. One is for company registries to be made open and transparent. And this was an exercise already begun by the Companies Commission of Malaysia back in 2019. So we'd like to ask for its progress and for the Malaysian government to expedite the implementation of this in order that the vigilance can be enhanced and company structures, movement of money, detecting of shell companies can be made a reality. And this can actually avoid money, illicit financial flows from flowing out of the country. The second recommendation from us is to actually establish an asset declaration law, a system that can actually track enrichment of people in power, members of parliament, as well as those who hold public office. And this system of tracking enrichment, is very important to actually track if any of this enrichment is actually illegal. So the tracking of illegal enrichment is a way in which an asset declaration law can help to determine if a politician or someone who's holding public office and high public office would suddenly become rich exponentially over 5 years and suddenly have many dealings in offshore accounts, etc. And all of these assets will need to be declared. And it needs to be a process which is undertaken in Parliament. And the law should be one that will give the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission full mandate to go after those that had fraudulently declared, underdeclared, or had not declared at all.
So how do we ensure proper accountability and transparency when it comes to implementing these laws? What kind of mechanism do we need to have?
Right now, what we have is just a commitment, a resolution passed in Parliament to compel MPs to declare their assets. But it's not legally binding, and it does not give the MACC the power to go after those who have fraudulently declared their assets. So, for example, there are several MPs that are mentioned in the Pandora Papers. So it's important to check if there is a law, if all of these assets, including those that are offshore assets, if they have been declared. And those that are held by family members are also important for asset declaration to track illicit enrichment. And that is the purpose of asset declaration. So we recommend these two very urgent reforms immediately first. And following that, the recently concluded UN General Assembly Against Corruption held last June issued a very weighty political declaration that talked about many other areas of international cooperation that are needed to fight money laundering, to fight financial crime, as well as high-tech financial crime, which make things very complicated in this day and age where the internet, high-tech ways in which money can be moved around has been on the rise.
Cynthia, thanks for joining us today. That was Cynthia Gabriel, human rights advocate at the Centre to Combat Corruption and Cronyism, speaking to us about the Pandora Papers and the reforms that we need to address these sorts of issues. Do keep those thoughts coming. We'll look at them after this. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.